You're listening to NPR on Health. I'm your host, Joe Neal. For a lot of us, getting cholesterol down is a constant battle. In this podcast, we'll take a look at two methods for getting your cholesterol down. We'll look at taking the dietary supplement called red rice yeast and some of the problems that may be associated with that. We'll also look at the New York City campaign to get trans fats out of food. We'll also hear what happens when you don't have enough good cholesterol in your body and the effect that may have on your brain. And finally, for something completely different, we'll hear from NPR's Joe Palca on why the herpes viruses hang out so long in the body. When you find out that you have high cholesterol, the first thing that a doctor will recommend is a healthy diet and exercise. But that doesn't always work, and some people have been trying a dietary supplement called red rice yeast. This week, a new study came out that suggested there might be some problems with the supplement. NPR's Allison Aubrey tells us more.
Barry Barron is a 59-year-old engineer who lives in the suburbs of Philadelphia. These days, he's trying to eat right, walk the cul-de-sac with his wife in the evenings, and to keep his cholesterol in check, he's taking capsules of red rice yeast. His whole wellness program began as a fluke a few years ago when he learned from his doctor that his blood pressure and cholesterol were way too high. At first, he was dismissive.
And I sort of put it in the back of my mind and said, you know, it's really not that big of a deal.
But then he met a cardiologist named David Becker, who runs a program called Change of Heart. Becker was looking for patients like Barron, who were at risk of having heart attacks or strokes, to participate in a 12-week experiment.
The key point is to get people to try to make lifestyle changes.
Becker also wanted to compare what happens to cholesterol levels when you add a standard cholesterol-lowering drug, such as the statin Zocor, versus the dietary supplement red rice yeast. Becker said he'd been hearing anecdotes for years that red rice yeast works. In fact, the original statin drugs were derived from a similar yeast. To test this, he put about 35 patients on Zocor and 35 others on red rice yeast.
And after 12 weeks, the results were virtually indistinguishable.
Meaning patients in both groups significantly reduced their cholesterol levels, especially the bad type of cholesterol called low-density lipoproteins.
The LDL went down in both groups about 40%.
Becker says he can't say for certain how much the diet and exercise were responsible for the improvements, but he has noticed that red rice yeast doesn't seem to produce the muscle cramping that is sometimes a side effect of statin drugs.
If you're very anxious to avoid cholesterol medications, or if you've had side effects from those medications, then this might be an alternative.
Becker says he would never take certain patients off statin drugs. This includes people who have advanced heart disease, meaning they've already had a heart attack, angioplasty, or stents. For them, statin medications can be life-saving. But for people such as 59-year-old Barry Barron, who had only high cholesterol but no other signs of illness, the combination of lifestyle changes and supplements seems to be working well.
I just had a stress test done and went with flying colors. I actually improved my health.
Barron says he knows he's got to have the discipline to keep up the exercise and diet. That's in his control. But here's the caution with red rice yeast. The capsules used during the study were tested and certified for their potency and purity. But cardiologist David Becker says that's not necessarily the case for all bottles of red rice yeast that you'll find on drugstore shelves.
You just don't know what you're getting. And you can get a batch one time, which is perfect and lowers your cholesterol, and then you can get another batch from the same company that might not be as good because nothing's regulated.
A new analysis out today from the supplement testing company ConsumerLab.com confirms this point. ConsumerLab's Todd Cooperman says he tested 10 brands of red rice yeast and found shocking differences in concentrations of the main active ingredient called lovastatin.
We found a 100-fold difference. One product had over 10 milligrams of lovastatin per pill. Another one had less than 0.1 milligrams of lovastatin.
Another finding is that 4 of the 10 brands were contaminated with a substance called citrinine, which is known to be toxic to the kidneys. All of this information puts consumers in a tough spot. The results of red rice yeast are promising, but as with all unregulated supplements, problems with quality control and contamination undermine confidence. Alison Aubrey, NPR News, Washington.
Now, before you hit the keyboard to tell us we got it wrong, you should know that red rice yeast is also called red yeast rice. July 1st was a momentous day for some restaurants in New York City. That was the day they had to eliminate trans fats from all their food. New York City has the strictest trans fat law in the country. Last year, restaurants had to take the trans fats out of cooking oil. Now they're being required to take the trans fats out of everything. New York's Mayor Michael Bloomberg said the ban on trans fats could save a couple of hundred lives a year. But if restaurants aren't going to be using trans fats, what will they use? Butter? Palm oil? NPR's Robert Siegel, a host on All Things Considered, talked to a leading nutrition expert in New York.
Joining us from New York University is Marion Nessel, Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
I mentioned palm oil, which seems to be a fairly common substitute. Is that an improvement?
Well, it's very high in saturated fat. And one of the great ironies of all of this is that in the late 1980s and early 1990s, there was an enormous public outcry about the use of palm oil in food products because they were so high in saturated fat. And saturated fat is the one that raises the risk of blood cholesterol and therefore heart disease risk, just the way that trans fat does, although maybe not to the same extent.
So why not a ban on saturated fats then instead?
Well, they're impossible to take out of the food supply. Saturated fats are part of every single oil and meat and dairy fat. All fats have some saturated fat in them. It's just a question of how much. Animal fats have more than vegetable fats. But they're natural. Trans fats were artificial, and so they could be removed, and that's why the city went after them.
Are there other common substitutes for trans fats that strike you equally as, six of one and a half dozen of the other?
Well, the easiest substitution is not hydrogenated oil, and that's a significant improvement. If you're trying to do what the trans fats did for the product manufacturers, which is to have an oil that's thicker and more stable at room temperature, then you have to do some tricks with it, and you either have to get an oil that's more saturated, or you have to do some fancy chemical tricks to mix unsaturated oils with fully saturated oils and get the degree of saturation that you want. But in any case, removing the trans fats does nothing for calories, because whatever oil gets substituted for it will have exactly the same number of calories. This isn't about obesity. It's about reducing heart disease risk.
Now, the ban in New York City applies to food that's served in various kinds of restaurants or other catering businesses. In terms of packaged foods, trans fats have already been addressed by the FDA.
Yeah, the FDA in 2006 required packaged food companies to put the amount of trans fat that they had in the product on their labels, and that was an immediate action that got companies to immediately remove the trans fat from their products, so that mostly what you see on labels is 0000. Now, zero has a particularly interesting meaning because there's a little loophole that says if the trans fat is less than half a gram per serving, the companies can claim that it's zero. And a lot of people are worried about that. I don't worry about that. It's really a small amount.
But the sourdough pretzel that I'll admit to eating that says 0 grams trans fat in huge letters on the bag has some other fat in it instead that I'm ingesting.
Well, yes, you have to go look at the ingredient list and read through the ingredient list and see whether there is any hydrogenated fat in there. If there is hydrogenated fat, then the product falls underneath the half-gram rule. If there isn't, then it really doesn't have any trans fats.
I read an Associated Press story about cannoli today, and a baker who was here's a public health danger, banging his head against the wall, he said, trying to get a cannoli that would stick together without using
Well, I'm a little bit surprised by that. I hate to say it, but those must not be very good cannoli. It's perfectly possible to make cannoli with a shortening that doesn't have trans fatty acids in it.
Well, Professor Nessel, thank you very much for talking with
My
us
pleasure.
About it today. It's Marion Nessel, Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University.
And one more thing on cholesterol. Researchers in Europe are reporting that low levels of HDL, the good cholesterol, may increase the risk of memory loss, and it may even lead to dementia in later life. The study was published by the American Heart Association. NPR's Patty Naiman has more.
Scientists tested levels of blood fats in over 3,600 individuals. They measured bad and good cholesterol. Then they read each participant 20 different words. The volunteers had 2 minutes to write down as many words as they could remember. Researchers found that people with low levels of good cholesterol were much less likely to remember the long list of words they just heard compared to those with high levels of good cholesterol. 2 years later, for those with low levels of good cholesterol, memory got even worse. Good cholesterol clears excess bad cholesterol from the blood and strengthens nerve cells. To raise good cholesterol, doctors recommend exercising regularly and reducing the intake of all fats, especially saturated fats and trans fats. Patty Naiman, NPR News.
Our final story looks at herpes. Most people in this country are infected by one or more of the herpes viruses, and they may not even know it. That's because the virus has a remarkable property. It can lie dormant for years and then suddenly flare up. How the virus manages this hibernation and reawakening has been a mystery until now. Scientists think they may have figured it out. NPR's Joe Pelka explains.
There are many different types of herpes virus. Herpes simplex virus type 1 causes cold sores. Herpes simplex virus type 2 causes genital sores. And a third herpes virus causes chickenpox in children and shingles in adults. Brian Cullen studies the cold sore variety of herpes. Cullen is at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. He says people usually become infected with this herpes virus early in life.
You get infected when you're a kid, and the virus actually stays with you till you die.
Cullen says the virus typically enters the body through the mouth or lips, but then it goes to infect nerve cells called neurons.
When herpes simplex virus infects a neuron, it actually goes to the nucleus and it just sits there.
And it can just sit there in what's called the latent state for decades.
And during that time, what it makes is this one RNA molecule called the latency-associated transcript, or LAT.
This strand of genetic material called LAT breaks down into a lot of tiny fragments called microRNAs. These microRNA molecules can switch off genes. Cullen says in the case of herpes infection, the genes switched off by the microRNAs are the very genes that cause the virus to replicate. So normally, the microRNAs keep the virus dormant. It's only when replication genes get specially revved up, usually because of some external stress, that the microRNAs are overwhelmed. The virus explodes from its resting state, and the symptoms of the herpes infection reappear. Cullen says it's interesting to think about what would happen if you switched off the microRNAs. By his theory, without them, the virus would be replicating all the time.
Now, that arguably is a bad thing, but it turns out that we have really good drugs that kill productively replicating herpes simplex viruses that are approved drugs that are commercially available.
So switching off the microRNAs might actually be a good thing. The drugs can't kill the virus when it's dormant.
The concept would be that you might be able to activate the virus, drive it into productive replication, treat with one of these drugs, and kill the virus as soon as it pops its head out.
All that is for the future. For the moment, scientists will want to confirm Cullen's work to make sure it holds up. There have been a lot of rival theories about how the herpes virus can remain dormant in cells for decades. But Patricia Speer says the theory of Cullen and his colleagues involving microRNAs will attract a lot of attention from people in the field, many, no doubt, trying to prove it wrong. Speer is a herpes expert at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois.
They've presented a plausible way for this to happen.
So I guess what you would be saying then is it's not like every lab studying latency and herpes virus is going to pack up and say, well, our work is done.
No, no way. This has been a very contentious field, and this is new information, it's exciting information, and it undoubtedly is a part of the story, but I just would caution, it's not the whole story.
That's usually the way it is in science. Joe Palca, NPR News, Washington.
That's it for this podcast. If you want to hear more health and science stories, tune in to your local NPR station. There's a list of them at npr.org. Or, while you're on the website, click on the Health and Science link over on the left side of the page. Thanks for listening. I'm Joe Neal, NPR News.